Hello and welcome to the Good Vibes Film Club, the audio show that's like a book club but with films. Every week we invite you to join along with our club and watch films with us in between the episodes, not physically at the same time because we don't have enough seats or space. My name is Adam Denby and I'm joined every week by my better half, the lovely, the enchanting, the vibrant, Sarah Warner.
Bonjour.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Very multilingual today.
Yeah, we did have a little bit of a gap last week. We apologise for that. We were in Rome, weren't we?
We were. Yeah, so I went French first. That was wrong. I was just...
I said buongiorno.
You did. You were correct. You spoke Italian.
I was actually referencing our Inglourious Basterds episode. Buongiorno. What films are we doing this week?
We are looking at Your Name and Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two films.
And how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
You're always all right. You're supposed to be honest.
I'm chipper. I'm good.
Yep.
I'm good.
Okay, and as always, we'll be
talking
about...
life gets me down sometimes, but I'm all right.
You realise you just interrupted my...
Yeah, I just did it. I did it on purpose.
As always, we'll be talking about each film in depth, so if you haven't seen the film and you would like to, go watch it. This is your spoiler warning. Equally, if you're not too bothered about these films but want to be entertained for the next 60 minutes, stick around. Remember to stay tuned to the very end of the show and find out which films we'll be covering next week. So don't let yourself fall behind. You always laugh at that.
Always, have you said that before?
It's on the script, say every time. Okay.
Well, so at least someone's listening.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the first film?
I'm ready.
We're talking about the first film, which is Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of your favourite films. Is it actually
I think
your...
it might be my favourite film now.
Your favourite film of all time.
I love it. I love it.
It is very good.
I love it.
In fact, this might be a bit of a boring section because I don't really have anything bad to say about it.
I don't have anything bad to say about Rogue One. I also love that film.
I picked films that are very good. Yeah. I mean, I think I wanted to start
Wait until you hear next week's choice.
I wanted to start off by introducing to films that you'd never seen before. I thought a podcast would be like a good way of doing that. But now we're getting to a point where you're just watching films that are just really good.
I think last time I was just like, oh, can we do Rogue One? Because I just fancy watching it. I probably should have picked something I don't know as well. Like Kung Pao, Enter the Fist when we did that.
I've got
I
was
like,
what is this?
Yeah.
Just wait until next week.
Yeah, next week will be more interesting. Or like, what was it we did? Return to Oz.
Well, yeah.
I quite enjoyed that in the end,
yeah, that's good,
I'll be honest.
Good Disney film, that one. Okay, so we're starting off with the plot. So it's about two Japanese teenagers, male and female, who swap bodies occasionally when they're sleeping.
Yeah, they'll wake up in each other's bodies. Yeah.
After realising what's happened, they leave notes for each other and try and help each other out. But they sort of end up falling in love, don't they?
Yeah.
That's probably about the first hour of the film.
Yeah.
Okay, and then halfway through, there's a twist that Taki, the guy, he goes to visit Mitsua.
Mitsua,
how to pronounce it. Finds out her village was destroyed by a comet 3 years ago.
And that blew my mind in the cinema.
Amazing,
I was like, what? What? Yeah, I loved it.
So good. So he's not only been swapping with bodies with another person who's across the country, he's swapping with someone from the past.
Yeah.
And essentially, she's time-traveling forward as well and seeing what the future's like.
Yeah.
But I guess they don't really know that because their worlds are so different that it wouldn't matter anyway.
Yeah, they don't know.
Yeah. I'll come on to that later. And there's a one bit, I guess, where... And I really am, summarising these bits. But he goes to a shrine with Mitsua's grandmother when he's Mitsua.
Yep.
And she kind of, spits in this box.
Yeah, they have this way of making, a type of sake where they kind of... Mitsua and a little sister, they chew the rice up and, spit it in a bowl.
And it ferments
for, and makes alcohol. Yeah.
So, basically, when he finds out that she'd been... the comet had hit 3 years ago, obviously she was dead, and all of the village is dead as well.
Destroyed, yeah.
So you kind of... This is... I've really skipped, three quarters of the way through the film. But I should say as well, the reason why these two paths kind of align is because to do with the comets as well. While they're in the sky, while it's ongoing, this kind of magic enchantment happens where they body swap. But then he tries to save her, basically, by going to that shrine and tasting the fermented spit.
Yeah.
A piece of her soul, whatever. It basically transports him, gives him one last like body swap to go back in time to before the comet hits and to warn basically the entire village, round everyone up and get them to move.
Yeah. She has to go back down. No, I think she formulates the plan with her friends.
Yeah.
For the like explosion and distraction. I think she does that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that meeting.
Yeah, there's a bit hazy on there's a lot of swapping. Anyway, so they say, but the problem is because after they swap bodies, they kind of forget each other's names. Even though the village is saved, they forget about each other. The only reason they were able to do it throughout the rest of the film was because they were writing notes in each other's phones and things. And obviously, as the comet kind of comes to the end of its course, it becomes harder and harder for them to like remember each other. Mm. And then when the comet goes and the time and body swapping stop happening, then they just basically drift apart and they don't recall any of those memories anymore.
No, it's like they say they always have like a feeling that there's like someone out there or there's like something they need to do, but they just can't remember what it is. There's always this kind of feeling of something else, but they can't put the finger on it.
Then at the very end of the film, it jumps ahead 3 years later, I think. 3 or 5 years later. 5 years I've written here. And their trains kind of run parallel to each other and they see each other in the windows and they kind of know there's something between them. They get off the trains and they run and they try and meet up and eventually they see each other on the steps and they walk past each other and then one of them turns around and says,
I know you, ask
for your name. I wanted to ask your name.
Yeah.
And then the film ends.
And I weep.
And we all cry.
Yep.
It is a very emotional film.
Yeah. So I think actually, if you said that the town isn't saved, the town still gets destroyed.
But they get everyone out.
But everyone, gets evacuated. So that's why she moves, her and her family move to Tokyo because, her home is destroyed, just everyone survived.
Yeah. So I summed it up really badly, but I've got some thoughts.
Well, like we say, it helps if you've watched, then you'll kind of get what we're on about. If you've not watched it, that'll be not making tons of sense.
Which is great, because then you can go watch it and it will make sense.
Though we've ruined the ending, but yes.
So I think for me, one of the reasons why it connects so deeply with us is just having gone to Japan.
Yeah.
It's like you see anime and the way that it's drawn and you kind of think of it as this fantasy fictional land. And then you actually get to Tokyo and anywhere in Japan and you think oh, that thing that I saw in like cartoon, it's like it's there in real life.
Yeah, I think there was a real craze after this film came out of people going and finding the spots that are actually in the film. Yeah, yeah. Like the steps, for example, and people going and like taking pictures. There was like a real craze.
I put the touches, like the little JR line like stickers that you see on the trains and things. You know, that's where that logo would be on a carriage in Japan, in Tokyo. It's like, I can't really think of that many animated films that we have that kind of like capture our country and are that accurate and have that much kind of detail and something about Japanese animation that's just able to...
modern animated film set in like London or something.
I know, I wonder like, or if you flipped it and had like those Japanese animators doing about England, what that would actually look like.
Yeah.
Look quite a nice hybrid. So I've also got music, food, landscapes, like all of that, even down to like the food where they're going into cafes and stuff and like the dishes that you see.
Yeah.
But just general kind of like the way that it reflects Japan is why it's so great. Another thought I've got is, well, it's not really a thought, but one thing that I always forget when I watch this film is the first kind of like, I think it's like minute is kind of, well, do you remember the first minute? You describe it.
Well, it's when they're both kind of looking up at the comet, like, separately, and are, like, describing it, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then it goes into, like, the opening titles.
But what it does there that I always forget is it kind of flashes through their lives throughout the film that you haven't seen yet. So, like, it shows them when they're at their oldest point 5 years later, even before any of that's happened. And it's really, like, really nice kind of like foreshadowing of the whole film. It's almost like a flash forward, but it's like a flash like summary in a way.
Mm.
And also the music. Mm. I mean, the music in the film.
The soundtrack is like unbelievable.
It's great.
The songs. I can't listen to it always. Like, if I'm in the wrong mood, I just weep. I think in a lot of these podcasts, I talk about just weeping at things. I'm not, some people cry at like everything. I'm not that bad, but I do cry quite a lot at things.
I've got city versus rural Japan,
mm-hmm.
which is a really big theme in the film, because the bit I skipped over about them swapping lives, when they first starting out, it's kind of like she's always wanted to see what Tokyo's like in the city.
Yeah, big city, yeah.
And I think a lot of people forget that Japan's like a big place.
Mm.
You're probably bigger than the country that we live in by quite a bit.
Yeah, it's not that big.
But I think people
it's
have...
bigger than England.
People have like an image in their head of what Japan is, and it's usually kind of Tokyo. But there is...
I just chucked tea down myself. I
spilled a drink. But people usually think of Tokyo, and they think of anime, and they think of like, I don't know, maid cafes and things, and all the video games and like crazy rabbit head kind of costumes and things. But you forget how different, like it's almost like a different country in itself. The contrast between somewhere mainland like Tokyo and then somewhere out in...
Yeah, there's a lot of rural places where... Yeah.
With like shrines and they worship little rocks and things, like rocks with bibs on them.
Yeah, saw some of them.
I don't understand. don't quote me on that. So like the cafe, for instance, like a bit where she swaps and then they're like, oh, we're going to go to the cafe. And she's like, cafe? Oh, you don't get that in the English one, but...
I think I have watched the dub.
Yeah.
Once, because I wanted to watch it, but I just felt really sleepy. So I put the dub on. I do normally watch... it was subtitles. But yeah, because the town where they're from, they joke like, oh, let's go to the cafe, and like Mitsuru and a friend get really excited and their friend just means the vending machine, in the town, like that's all they have.
Which is weird, because also, you know, in this country, if you were to pop out in the middle of Cornwall, you wouldn't find a vending machine.
No. They've got vending machines everywhere.
But yeah, they do. But you probably find a cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've got both bringing benefits to each other's lives. So they're kind of like... obviously we covered like the cafe stuff, but also he gets a lot from her, like kind of she helps him with like his relationships at work, befriends like this woman that he's always really liked, and she kind of like plans dates for him and things. Yeah
And I think he sort of like, she's not like a proper nerd, but I think because they do a lot of stuff in the shrine in her town, her and her sister, they have to do these sort of ceremonies like with the rice. I think some of the other kids at school think it's a bit weird, and they kind of laugh about behind her back a bit. And I think when Taki's in her body, kind of makes her a bit cooler, edgier, yeah. And she gets more of an attitude, and like loads of guys start like fancying her and stuff.
I put playing basketball as well,
because obviously just like her boobs are jiggling and all the boys are like, oh, at these boobs, whereas like probably her in her own body, she's a bit more reserved and shy about those things. But as a guy, he's just a bit more like, oh, playing sport and like just boobs everywhere.
So I've got problems, and I did have to think about these because, like we said, it's a great film. But I put time travel rules are a little bit stretched and made up sometimes.
Don't care.
so like. There's a bit I was watching the other day, and then all of their kind of like notes and correspondence just get erased from the phone.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
And I guess it's a bit like to do with when it ends, that they forget each other, and that kind of is stretched across to, and then all of their memories and time and everything they wrote down is gone as well. But at the same time, it's not like she was erased from existence, like it never happened. Because obviously people know about that town.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they're looking for it and they find, you know, the photos and the drawings, people are like, oh yeah, you know, that place that got destroyed. It's not like he altered time and suddenly didn't happen. She just died. because you have to start off by saying, okay, so these two timelines are happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're already saying that the past has been written, has not been written, and the present is like on its own path. We're saying these two, but then you're kind of like blending the two sort of time travel, the kind of like mechanics together.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of pick one or the other, kind of a little bit annoying, but it feels like sometimes they're just stretching it to kind of make the story engaging and drive to a certain point.
Yeah, like it probably doesn't fit all the rules of time travel. I know that's something you're like, into.
It's just make it fit within your own film. That's the only requirement. If you set out and say these are the laws within this film,
mm-hmm.
stick to them. That's all.
Okay.
My other point was why is he the only one who doesn't know about the comet in the village? Like, he couldn't describe it to his friends, and they went on this road trip to try and figure it out. But when someone actually said the name of the thing that he was looking from, his mates were like, oh, yeah, that, you could have just said that, like, from the beginning. Because they knew the name of the place, that it was on the news years ago when this big comet happened. I think you'd probably know if a comet hit, like, England. We'd be like, oh, Cardiff, yeah, that got destroyed 5 years ago by a comet.
Yeah, does he not know the name of it, though, even though he's been there?
He doesn't know the name, doesn't know anything about it.
Maybe he can't remember. Like, he can't remember her name.
So he can draw sketches and stuff of the place he went to.
Yeah, so
he doesn't know. He doesn't know, but then everyone else seems to know about it. And then I just put, it's too emotional.
Too emotional. I remember, what was it?
It's a nice emotional film, you know.
Yeah.
It's not.
I think you had found, so the band that did all the soundtrack and all the songs, they did in Japan some live concerts where they showed the film and had them play the music live with it. And I think I came down one morning, I think I'd been on a night out the night before, so I was kind of hungover, and you just put a song on, like on the TV, on YouTube, you found it, and I just like wept on like a Saturday morning.
It's the one as well that just starts off with just the vocals on its own. It's like a solo.
Or the piano.
No, there's one where it's at the very end, and when it says your name and it flashes up, there's a little bit where it's just someone singing, but there's nothing else.
I'm going to have to go listen to it after this. It's amazing.
Favourite scenes?
Ooh.
This is what we swapped out from themes last time.
Oh.
Yeah. So themes, I put my favourite scene is the boob grabbing scene.
It's funny, it's got funny
because
moments
of its comedic value.
Mm.
I think that's, if you were a teenage boy, that's what you'd be doing.
Yes.
And just the time when he's like, he's halfway through and he's like, no, for her, I won't do it, I'll resist, and he sighs, and then it cuts to like the outside of the room and the little girl, the little sister, like, opens up and she's just there squeezing her boobs again.
Because I think, a lot of teenage boys...
A laugh in the cinema as well.
Yes, we saw it twice at the cinema, like different cinemas. It got a laugh both times. Because probably, if you were like a 16-year-old boy or whatever and you woke up in a girl's body, you'd probably feel the boobs.
100%. And then I put the Radwimps montage, which is like a third in... there's a montage and Radwimps, the music's playing.
Yeah, it's a song.
And it's...
It's called like Zen Sensei or something. But I think that's Japanese.
The way that it's cut to the music, but also the landscape illustrations in that scene.
Mm.
It's just loads of montage of Japan and Tokyo.
Yeah.
And these amazing, beautiful scenes. And it's just something that you can't describe.
Mm.
Something you have to see, especially in Blu-ray on a big TV.
Yeah.
With even, we saw it in the cinema.
We saw it on the IMAX a second time.
Mm.
Which, because I was just like, IMAX, yes. And it was gorgeous.
Okay, trivia.
Don't I get a favourite scene?
Oh, yeah, gone.
I have to think, so I haven't watched it in a while. I think, like you say, so there's kind of that song you mentioned, there's kind of a montage, but also at the beginning of the film, there's the song Your Name, and there's sort of a montage, kind of the opening. I think that, just seeing it, I don't know, it's just not what I expected, because it's kind of like a mini music video, like, in the film. And I just thought it was amazing. Like, it just really, like, blew me away, that style and how it's done. And I guess probably just... the scene when they meet in the twilight and they're like on, it's kind of like a bit the shrine is kind of like this weird crater, and the shrine's like down, and they meet, and it's just adorable because it's like, it's not an overly cheesy love story, and it doesn't end with them like, you know, kissing in an embrace or anything like that. It kind of just feels, even though the film isn't real because there's like time travel and stuff, but it just feels kind of natural and believable.
Yeah. I think there's some, especially some of the animated films as well of this genre that are a bit, they're like pulling at your heartstrings, but it's all just, either sad or it's like over the top lovey stuff. And this doesn't do that at all. It's just kind of like, especially I think the first three quarters is just kind of them swapping bodies and having like, because they think it's a dream initially. Mm-hmm. So they're just doing like crazy, stupid stuff with no consequences. And they barely even meet or interact, but there's just this overarching kind of love story. Can I go into trivia?
Yes.
Yeah. So, number one, this is the first anime film not by Studio Ghibli or Hayao Miyazaki to gross 10 billion yen at the Japanese box office. So that's quite a record, isn't it?
Yeah. So I have to say, like, I know the Oscars are not the be-all and end-all and stuff gets snubbed every year, but this was not nominated for Best Foreign Film, Best Animated Feature, I don't think. I'm pretty sure. Which is bollocks.
I think it's definitely having some impact, though.
Like, oh, yeah.
I mean, when we eventually do get to that point, I'd say this is one of the reasons why.
Oh, animated, like Spirited Away, I think that won Best Animated.
Yeah.
Was that Best Foreign or Best Animated? I think Best Animated Film. So they do get nominated sometimes.
Mm.
Just not this one.
So, number two. Two Nintendo video game platforms can be seen in the room in which Mitsu and her friends plan their actions late in the film. Huh. The Famicom, known in the West as the Nintendo Entertainment System, NES, and the Orange GameCube, Both of the shown designs were exclusively available in Japan.
So see, that's fun trivia for you, I don't care.
Yeah, but it ties into what I was saying about the detail about you being in Japan. It's like, when you see that, although it's something that I know and associate my own life with, that particular model only exists in Japan, which, again, it's just like everything you see, you know that you're in Japan.
Yep.
Number three. In the scene where Mitsu and her friends are planning their action with Town's early warning system, this is the same scene, on Katsuyuki's desk, I can't pronounce that, I assume that's one of the friends, there is a rare old, sold exclusively in Japan computer present, a Sharp 8600. This is the same characteristic computer used by Daru in Steins Gate, a famous anime film also about time travel.
Huh. I'm really sorry. I've got hiccups like the third time today.
That's okay. We can pause and try and make them go away. Or I could do like a really big jump scare.
No.
No? So what did you think about my third trivia fact?
Whose computer was it?
It's just...
Her friend or her dad's?
There's a scene where they're in... It doesn't matter. There's a computer in it, which is the same one as Steins Gate.
Okay.
And that's about time travel as well.
Mm.
Which is also a series, anime series, that we both really like.
Really good, yeah. I want to rewatch that.
Okay, so you ready for my conclusion? Then we can break and maybe you'll have hiccups.
Yeah. Am I allowed to say my final thoughts after your conclusion?
Yep.
Just in case... Oh, my God.
Okay,
yeah,
well, my conclusion is very... I think we've covered it. The fact that I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, yes. So, like, yes, I do like it. It involves time travel, comedy, and romance, just like Back to the Future.
Oh. Yeah.
Now, your turn.
I would just say, I don't know if this is maybe a slightly ignorant thing to say. Because I know... Sorry, the hiccups. I know when I first met you, I kind of wasn't really aware of anime and, like, Japanese cinema and, like, television and stuff. And I know, like, some people I know watch it and are aware of it, and other people I know are not really aware. So I think if it's something, I think this is quite a good, so obviously some anime is maybe a bit more, not weird, but I don't know what the words I'm trying to
I know, and I'm sure anyone who's seen anime will probably know what you mean.
Like, you get some that are more bizarre than others, and like Akira,
Paprika
Paprika's pretty out there. Akira, we went and saw that in the cinema because they were showing it at like an independent cinema near us, and I was like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be like really big, really important for the genre, and it freaked me out. I was like, it's weird. So if someone has never watched anime and they watched Akira, they might be like, what the hell? Whereas I think this film is more, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for.
It's one that you could ease someone into the genre.
Like more universal.
Yeah. It's like a beginner. No, not a beginner. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's a way of,
I don't know the word I'm looking for.
It's like dipping them into the bath. You know, you put your toe in and then you get your ankle in and right.
I think this is good
Akira
to get
like
you
chucking someone in.
Akira's freaky, like
chuck him in at the deep end.
I felt like on edge like that whole evening. It weirded me out.
Yeah, there's definitely a path to like introducing people into anime, and I'd kind of recommend this is nearly at the beginning.
Like, I think the first film you showed me was The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
Was it?
Oh goodness, hiccups. Yeah.
Okay.
And then first,
just lots of anime films about time travel.
Yeah, and I think, sorry about the hiccups. The first Ghibli film I think was Howl's Moving Castle.
Mm.
I think that's the first one you showed me, which is still my favorite one that I've seen.
Accessible is that word?
Yeah, maybe more accessible to someone that's not familiar with anime.
Because the thing is, Howl's Moving Castle, I think in terms of themes and character design and stuff, it's very out there. But I feel like it's a bit more accessible. And that's usually just to do with like how well structured the narrative is and how familiar some of those narrative themes are to other films that you've seen in different genres. So you can kind of, you've got an anchor to kind of keep you watching and keep you familiar. Okay?
Yep.
And that's everything on Your Name.
Yeah.
Yay.
Gone. So now we're going to move on to Rogue One, Star Wars story. No, it doesn't do that at the beginning.
Spoilers.
So yeah, we'll go through the story a bit. This film came out in the UK like Christmas 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, a while ago now. Okay, so quickly just to go through the plot. Essentially, this story is set before Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. It's basically, in Star Wars A New Hope, you see that they have the plans for the Death Star and they know how to destroy it, and Rogue One is basically how they got those plans.
Yeah. That's a good summary. Yeah.
So, basically, the main character, Jyn Erso, her father, when she was little, was basically taken back to the Empire. He's an engineer or scientist or something. He's basically a really integral part in building the Death Star.
He didn't really want anything to do with it anymore, did he?
No. He tries to escape, but Krennic from the Empire comes back and he's like, you got to come help on this Death Star. Oh, it's sort of, or he like left, but then they're kind of making him go back.
I feel like they would have stopped him at his like exit interview and being like,
yeah, but he is in hiding. Like he said, you know, you were difficult to find.
We don't know, do we?
He worked for the Empire and then he didn't and now they want him back. His wife gets killed, Jyn escapes, and basically Galen goes back to the Empire, and Jyn gets raised by Saw Gerrera, who's like a radical anti-imperialist, so he's like a rebel, but really extreme, like more extreme than the Alliance.
He's got radical methods.
Yes. So then basically we go years later, Jyn is now grown up, she's, I think, a criminal, she's being transported to like a labour camp.
Yeah.
And she's kidnapped by the Alliance, and they basically say, look, we know you're Jyn Erso, you're Galen Erso's daughter, and we know, you know, Saw Gerrera, so if you help us get in with him, because we want to try and collaborate.
It's like an episode of 24.
Kind of,
like, we'll strike you a deal.
Yeah, and they're like, we'll let you go free if you help us speak to Saw. Yeah. And because they want to try and find out what Galen's doing and this weapon, Death Star and everything. So then basically the rest of the film is them getting the plans for the Death Star. So there's
I think there's a turning point, isn't there, when she does find him and do the mission. There's like a message from her father.
Yeah, so there's a...
Because up until that point, she doesn't really care about all of that stuff.
No, because she's sort of... She was raised, obviously, by an extreme rebel.
Mm.
But then you get the impression, like, her family deserted her. He saw at some point, like, deserted her. So all this rebel, all this rebellion, all this fighting, it's not really brought her any good. So she's just not interested in it. She kind of just wants to put her head down and look after herself. Like, she's not interested in the greater kind of cause.
There's that quote, and I think it's a, are you okay with there being, like, empire flags up in the, you know, all around you? And she says, it's not a problem if you don't look up.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's sort of just keeping my head down, surviving, looking after me, because no one else has sort of helped me out. Everyone's just left me. So she finds the message. A message has been given to a Imperial pilot who's defected, and it's like a hologram of her dad basically saying, I put a flaw in the Death Star, so if like you do this, you get the plans and you do this, it'll all blow up.
His master plan.
Yeah, so then the rest of the film is them going to the Imperial archives, getting the plans so they can give them to the Alliance, and they can destroy the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the film ends, they manage to get the plans and kind of transmit them up. There's this whole big aerial fight going on, loads of fighting, and they manage to get them up, but Peter Cushing's character, whose name I cannot remember... But the guy with the CGI face, he like instructs for the base, the archives to be destroyed by the Death Star. So basically Jyn and, oh my God, his name is gone. Cassian Andor, who's like the main guy she's doing the plan with, they get killed basically. Basically everybody dies.
Yeah.
All our little gang of rebels, our rogues, everybody dies.
Mm-hmm.
But they succeed in getting the plans to the Alliance and to Princess Leia.
Yep.
Which feeds into A New Hope.
Yay.
Because it takes place like a few days before...
The first ever Star Wars film.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Thoughts. I remember my first... Because this was the first kind of Star Wars story film. But I still thought there'd be like the normal opening credits... With the da, da 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 and the rolling, and there wasn't.
You were not alone.
I know, but then I think when we came out, I was like, oh, I was disappointed that wasn't there, and you were like, but it's not like one of the episodes. You were like, it makes sense, and I was like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'm not sure why people assumed that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And also, some of the music's written by John Williams, but it's also got a lot, it's got his name somewhere, a different composer. Michael... Tarkin. Oh, Tarkin, Peter Tarkin. Cushing's character, yeah. Thank you.
Sorry for those Star Wars fans who are getting like, really enraged by that.
Sorry.
I had to find out.
Yeah, the other composer, so they use stuff from John Williams, but also Michael Giacchino. Sorry if I'm saying your name wrong. I really like the new music, but it's got, like, I like the bit where they're having, like, an Alliance meeting, and you see the guy that plays, like, Princess Leia's kind of foster dad, and it goes like, do in the film. I noticed that when I was watching it. I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's all.
But you mean, yeah, well, that's kind of what I assumed it would be.
Mm. I didn't know if it was going to be, because obviously Force Awakens and The Last Jedi are John Williams.
Mm.
But this is like, you've got some John Williams Star Wars themes in there, but you've also got new music. And I assume the same, I can't remember who the composer is for Solo.
Someone else.
I'm guessing not.
Yeah.
All John Williams. Anywho, that was my first thought. And one thing I know we definitely said, I mean, A New Hope, I don't know the last time I watched it, it's been a while, but this film just adds like a whole new context. Cause,
to the film that you already know.
Yeah, because you see the struggle. Because I think I've written, compared to a lot of the other Star Wars films, Rogue One is quite, not bleak, but it's quite serious. Like, the only comic relief really comes from K2SO, the droid.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the other films, like, obviously there are serious and sad bits, but you've got, like, Han and Chewie, and it's a bit more of a romp.
Yeah.
Especially the Han Solo film, definitely more fun. This film, I'd say, is not fun. And it's so serious, and you see everyone sort of fighting for this greater cause, and it just adds this whole new depth to A New Hope, where you now see the struggle and the sacrifice people made to get those plans.
Yeah.
And it's really stirring, like...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost like your brain knows that is the case, but it's not enough to just someone in A New Hope say it in a line, like, many Bothan spies died to give us this information.
Yeah.
And, like, that really, as a whole film, is basically adding context to that one line.
Mm.
But it's different when you see the struggle, like you say, as opposed to just someone saying this happened.
It happened, yeah. Yeah. You've, like, seen it for yourself now. So that's something I've written. And then I know we talked about Peter Cushing, Tarkin. So I know more and more now this is sort of starting to be used. So I can't remember that it's an actor that's kind of doing the movements. I've forgotten his name. He's in other things, but then he's kind of got Peter Cushing's face on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think, like, it is really good, but I think I did, when we were watching it, I was like, something that's not quite right. There's something a bit off. But I think, like, my mum and dad, like, well, no, they must have known, because they were, like, young when the first one came out.
No, they said, they were like, oh, we must have got some footage.
Oh, is that what they said? Yeah. Like, they didn't think it was, like, someone acting, and then they kind of computer generated his face over it.
Yeah.
So I think some people didn't notice. I was like, he looks a bit different. And then you've got Princess Leia at the end, so obviously, like, Carrie Fisher's face done as well.
Mm.
So I think even since then, that technology's kind of improved, but it's still pretty impressive that you're now able to do that. Like, I haven't seen...
what's the one recent? Yeah, that's it.
Haven't seen Captain Marvel.
With Samuel Jackson.
But yeah, they've, like, made Samuel... Like, he's playing himself... Not playing himself, you know what I mean? Like, Samuel L. Jackson is playing Nick Fury, but younger. And they've, like, made it. And apparently it looks really good.
Yeah.
I've not seen it.
But to be fair, he's only got a few wrinkles in the last, like, 40 years. Just airbrush some of them out digitally. Yeah. And basically the same.
Yeah, like, I don't know how old he is. But, yeah, he's aged very well.
He's, like, older than your dad.
Yeah, he probably is. Like, yeah, he probably is in his 60s. Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know.
So just before you go on, I feel like there's probably a lot more we haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have anything else to say, so carry on.
Okay. if I just go into more... Something I kind of like about this film, even Star Wars are not romance films, but in all of them, like, in the original ones, you've got Han and Leia, and then in the prequels you've got Anakin and Padme, and then in the new ones you've kind of got Finn fancies Rey, and then Rose fancies Finn. Well, they never did that, did they? But I kind of like in this film, like, I don't know if there was supposed to be sexual tension between Chin and Cassian and they just didn't perform it very well, or there isn't any sexual tension or kind of romance between them, and I kind of like that. It's refreshing that there's no kind of, they're just...
Yeah, so I like that point. I remember seeing it when it came out, and one of my friends at work kind of said, oh, it was a good film, and then sort of turned into, like, a stupid romance film at the end, and I didn't like it anymore.
No,
and I was like, you tell me the bit that I thought was a pivotal, like, good moment in the film that it didn't do that, you were annoyed about because you thought it did do that.
Which bit? Like, when they hug?
I don't know. When they die? I think some people... just sort of take whatever the surface, like, of the scene is. Do you know what I mean? They think, like, oh, there's a man and a woman. They're saying goodbye to existence. And I think sometimes they just fill in the blanks in their head. Yeah. But you say, I don't know whether or not they performed it well.
Like, I don't know if there was supposed to be chemistry and they just didn't pull it off, or there was never supposed to be chemistry. And it was just two people trusting each other and getting a job done.
I don't think...
Without wanting to, like, put things in each other?
I mean, I think that it was performed how it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But the fact that some people I know have come away thinking that there was, maybe it just wasn't portrayed in the right way that it...
Maybe. I think the only bit is, like, literally right at the end. They've sent the plans, they're coming back down in the lift, and they look at each other. That's the only bit where I kind of... But I think that's more just like they're kind of relieved, and I think they're kind of playing it through that I don't know if they know for sure at this point. Do they know the death? Yeah, the Death Star's fired at that point, right?
Mm.
So I think they kind of know, okay, we did it. probably, that they don't know for sure that someone got it and we're going to die, but we did it. And it's not really like, oh, I want to bang you, because there's no time for that. Like, they know they're about to die. And then, yeah, they hug on the beach because they can see it. Like, if I was sat there with someone and we were about to die, I'd bloody hell give them a hug. I think my last moment on Earth, I'd want some kind of human contact.
You just want to sort of put your head into their shoulders and
just wait.
Close your eyes.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah, it's no romance thing. Like, if you were there with, you know, with a friend or a colleague and you were about to get killed, you would hug each other.
Yeah, you wouldn't start being like, oh, I'm at second base.
No. Like, you'd reach out for that final bit of human contact before you're destroyed.
You know, it's like, you're a human, I'm a human, we're both going to die. Yeah. This is the end of our innings kind of thing.
Exactly. So I think it's more that than... I don't get any romantic feeling between them all, and I like that. I don't.
I think people sometimes just see what they want to see, or see what they don't want to see for some reason.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, like, they kind of trust each other, but they argue a lot, but not in like a sexy arguing way. Just like they're arguing about
type thing.
Yeah, and about getting orders and like him maybe killing her dad. Like, it's not all, oh, you're being stubborn and you're being arrogant and oh, and huffy huffy and like all this like. Oh, they're just arguing like this because like they fancy each other. It's not like that. Like,
it's more like a belief thing, yeah, isn't it? They're arguing about their beliefs.
So I've gone on about that point a lot.
I think that's probably the best bit of the conversation so far.
Yeah, I noticed more things, like more themes I got. Like, one thing was about...
Not doing themes.
Why?
We cut themes out.
Well, okay, more thoughts then. Thoughts and themes. Thoughts and themes. So another thought I have is that there is a theme of sacrifice.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Jin's father sort of sacrifices himself. He basically, like he says in the message, like, I've wasted so much of my life. He does. He wastes his life. He misses seeing his daughter grow up to protect her and puts all his mind, like, all his worth into this thing that's going to just kill, like, millions of people. And that's what he's spent his life on.
Yeah.
But he's kind of had to do it and then put this trap in it. And I think that's really sad that he's had to spend his whole life doing that. And, you know, he's a smart guy. He had a family. Like, he probably could have done something more useful.
The thing I was going to say before, and I think I wanted to kind of open with about this film, is that it's... I like the fact that it's not an episode...
Mm.
Number, and I know people who haven't seen it yet, even after all this time, because they don't think, oh, it's the chronological Star Wars. So I'm only interested in the. I don't want to see a spin-off. And for me, I think the point that you just touched on is that this is about like what it's like to live in like a galactic war, and you know, you don't get the day-to-day life in Star Wars Episode 6, for instance. You don't know what it's like for one of those individuals to live on that planet, in that town, with those people. And this is why I like the stories, because it's just so much world building and kind of like lore and exploration of the way that the Star Wars universe exists. And like you're saying, yeah, there probably are, like, you know, when you see like an army of stormtroopers, you kind of think, oh, there could be a story behind each one of those stormtroopers as to why they're there. And this is one of those things. It's like, yeah, the Death Star exists, so therefore there are jobs and there's like interviews and there's exit. And you get fired and you get, you know, chucked off the project. And sometimes people get hired on the project and then they've got like, they never see their kids. And suddenly you're thinking about all these things that have to exist. And not every film can pull that off, because sometimes... they just make up the rules in their film. It's kind of a little bit like, not directly like it, but in Your Name, like sometimes a film just has to have like rules in its existence, even if it's ones that it creates itself. Sometimes when it breaks that, it can kind of shatter the illusion. But other times they kind of go deeper into that and it really pays off. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, that's good. Another thing I noticed... Oh, sacrifice, what I want to say about, not spoken much about him yet, about Cassian's character. And like you say, sort of seeing those characters like living through it, like he says, like Jin gets annoyed with him, but she's sort of never really been involved in the resistance. And he's like, oh, well, yeah, all this is real for you now. This has been real for me. I think he says since he was like 6 years old, and he's been fighting it, like in it his whole life. And you see, like the first time you see him, he's meeting with like a contact and he's injured.
That guy from Holby City.
What's he from? He's like,
I don't know.
British guy. He's like familiar.
It sounds like he lives in London.
Yeah. And Star Wars. And he shoots him. And at first you're like, oh, who's this? Who's this guy? He's not very nice. But as you go on, you see how like his life of following orders and being like really in this sort of this rebellion, it's really like hardened him. And like, life is a struggle and life is hard and he's lost everyone. And it's just sad. You kind of see that more unromantic side of rebellion, like, you know, it's all like, oh, we're rebels and like greater good and all this. But then there's also, because there's something to rebel against, it probably means you've like lost your whole way of life and life is horrible. And you sort of see that through Cassie, and he's had this his whole life and he's had to sacrifice and lose a lot. And it's really sad.
Yeah.
And it's really hardened him.
Which, like, you know, in episode 6, when Ewoks are just like tying rocks to bits of string and like you're just laughing as they like kind of swing them into like tanks. You don't think about all this stuff, do
yeah
you?
Yeah,
and this is what kind of makes it like a real universe.
Something else I just wanted to talk about was like family and trust. So there's a bit, I think it's when they're traveling at one point, and there's a bit where you sort of see sort of a montage of little flashbacks for Jin. And she's sort of seeing like when like her parents like kind of not deserted her, but she got left and other things. And then there's just a bit where her mum's putting the necklace on her, and it's sort of the last word you hear is trust. And then she wakes up. And it's this whole thing. So obviously Jin is a criminal. She's not like some like reliable contact of the rebellion. They kind of brought her in. And like there's a bit of resistance between them, but her and Cassian do trust each other, and they do make a really good team and a really good bond by the end.
Yeah.
And I think I had more things. Just I think it's a real important theme, because a lot of people don't trust her, and she comes with this information, and it's this whole thing about rebellion being built on hope, and they're like, well, who are you? Like, why should we trust you? You saw this message that's now gone. And her dad's an Imperial like engineer. But Cassian like believes in her, and then they work together, and then it ends up okay. And it's sort of like, obviously you can't always blindly follow and trust people, but sometimes it's worth putting your faith in people and it can pay off. And I think in a situation like that, it really like pays off for them, and they take that leap, and it's just nice.
It's just nice.
And how, you know, she always, they ask her, the Alliance, when did you last see your father? And she's like, oh, I like to think he's dead. Because she doesn't know about, you know, she was so young when he went. She doesn't know what he's been doing. He could, like, love the Empire and be, like, really enjoying it. And when she sees that message, it's like she could have trusted all along that her dad was looking out for her, because she just didn't have that knowledge and didn't know if he was, like, an Empire traitor. Oh my, what do you call this
pop
thing?
pop shield.
It's always fallen on me.
Is that the end of thoughts?
I just wrote a little bit.
Did you like the film?
Oh, I love the film. It's brilliant. Slight issues, I think. Something I've said as well about, can you end up drawing parallels between the Alliance and the Empire, because you end up Cassian, even though he's in the rebellion, he's still getting to the point where he's just sort of blindly following orders. And they have to do these bad things, even though they're supposed to be the good guys.
Yeah.
So I think it just adds a bit more complexity to it. It's not all just black and white. Like, I guess you sometimes have to get a bit dirty to.
Well, especially with, I thought maybe you were going to bring up the, or maybe not because of how political it is, but I think the kind of radical rebellion group and that sort of town with,
because
the
they end up
and,
they're taking out like civilians, aren't they?
Yeah,
like they're taking out the stormtroopers, but they're doing it in a way where there's going to be a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah,
which the Alliance are not really on board with.
So I don't know if that was supposed to, like, I think when this came out, some people said that was kind of like metaphor for other types of
I'm sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But then, you know, does that mean you can never have that in a film without someone drawing a parallel to real life.
I think that's true with a lot of films that come out. They're inspired by, especially like the world we live in now, it's pretty divisive and a bit rubbish.
I think that's like, you know, you always just think there are these two forces as like the Empire versus Rebels.
Mm.
But you don't really think about like, people might have the same kind of, be on the same side, but have such radically different methods.
Mm.
And that's kind of like, you get that probably here, people in the same religions who take it different ways.
Mm.
Although they're all centered around like one core thing, or whether it's like a book that they follow or the same belief,
mm-hmm.
they can be so different. And I think usually Star Wars is like good versus evil. But then what does good mean?
Yeah, but within one belief, you can have different kind of wings of it and like a more radical wing and stuff.
Yeah,
so yeah, you can certainly draw parallels to real life.
Just especially, I don't think you would ever get that in the 70s, you know, when the films were coming out, that kind of thing.
I mean...
No, in terms of a sci-fi.
I don't know. I'm sure there's probably something you could have drawn a parallel on.
No, well, not about just taking that. It's more just like... it's quite advanced for the genre to be able to then start splitting down into kind of like subgroups like that. If you think of,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, just sci-fi starting off as in TV series or films, it's just come a long way to the point where we're quite advanced with it now.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple of small issues and then I'll come on to like my favourite bits. Just the very beginning. So what's supposed to happen is Galen is going to like give himself up to Krennic. And is it Lyra? Lyra?
Yeah, Lyra.
Lyra. She's supposed to like escape with Jin.
Yeah.
And Galen comes out and he's like, oh yeah, Lyra died. But then she sends Jin off and then she comes back. But then just sort of runs in. She's not stealthy. You know, there's Galen, there's Krennic, and then like four guards all with blasters, and she just runs in. And he's like, oh, haha, Lyra back from the dead. And then she just points the gun, and I'm like, what on earth did you think this was going to achieve? There's not one guy, there's like five guys, and you've just left your daughter, and now you're dead.
Is your question, would she do that, though?
I know it's a film, it's not real, and that's what someone decided she should do, but it just... I would go with my child. I'm sorry.
Would you, in the moment?
Yeah.
You would?
I think I'd go with my child. Because you love your child more than your husband.
I know. But maybe she was buying time for, you know, her to get out.
Maybe, I just think she could have done a better job. She just comes out and just points the gun. She sort of just comes hurtling up the hill like a bull in a china shop. And she's like, you can't take him. And it's like, well, there's five of them, love, and there's one of you. Like, they'll take him.
I think by that point, weren't they probably going to find them? You know, they were going to spread. Like, he didn't believe her. Him, rather.
I guess.
Maybe it's not the best thing that could have gone to plan.
I just don't think that's what a mother would do.
So why do you think she did it?
Like you say, maybe she was trying to buy time.
Thing is, I don't think, even if she didn't do it there, I know in the opening scene, on the way to getting Jin out of there, she would have got shot or hit or, you know, only Jin would have got out.
Yeah, maybe.
So it almost doesn't matter, like, what method you kill her off. Maybe she's just had it up to here. Maybe she's got, like, I don't know, severe depression or something. I don't know. Maybe. Just had it up to here. It's just like this Empire stuff is... I'd rather
hates the Empire more than she loves a child.
Yeah. Maybe she hates her life on that planet with nothing but like rocks to talk to. Probably she could have gone crazy from like living there.
Not that bad.
I know.
But yeah,
her
dad seems... I mean, we only see her mum for like 5 minutes, but her dad seems to like Jin more than her mum does.
Yeah, but he's like making... little spaceships in the garage and
little
stuff,
stardust. It's adorable.
All she's got is like milking, like cows.
The blue milk.
Blue milk. Yeah, next problem.
Have to mention, Boogalit will know.
Boogalit! Google it.
Just... I don't know, just that whole... Oh my God, this pop shield. The whole bit where, yeah, they're like questioning the pilot.
Yeah.
Bodhi. And there's just a dramatic bit where, Forrest Whitaker, Saw's just staring at him. And then there's like this music and it's like, duh. And then he grabs his gas mask and like inhales a bit. And then it's like, duh. And then he's like, boogle it. And Bodhi's like, boogle it. He's like, boogle it. Well, no, I just don't. And then there's just this big slimy monster. And I'm like, huh?
Part of me is like, Star Wars is always about the weird alien monster that,
yeah,
like,
but it
thing,
was a bit too monstery. Like,
whether it's a rancor or
I thought the rancor was cool.
Some weird, yeah. But I don't really know how Boggle It works. Like, does it extract information?
It like just put his weird little tentacles on his head.
Yeah, but
and then you don't see.
Does it extract information?
Because we don't know if they were ever kind of happy with the answer they got, because then they'll die.
Well, that's it.
So we don't know if they got what they needed.
Because he doesn't have any like consciousness and he's just like in a daze. Mm. Is that because they pulled all the information out of his head? Because if not...
Yeah,
because
it's supposed to make you go a bit mad, isn't it?
So where does the information go? Does the other guy like suck on the end of the tentacle?
Does Boggle It sort of go and like says it? I don't know. We don't know.
Well, I think one tentacle in the ear, pulling it out of his brain... And then another guy gets another tentacle in his mouth and it sort of sucks it into his. Well, this is what I mean.
It's not really... It's just a bit weird and you're like, huh? I don't like that bit.
Well, this is what I'm thinking while I'm watching it. I'm like, so how does the information get out?
Yeah.
It's kind of usually obvious with the Rancor. Just kill someone. We know it's just going to kill him. The Jabba wasn't like, oh, I'll have to get the information somehow. Let's chuck him into a monster's mouth and then he dies.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I don't need this person, therefore feed him to the monster.
Mm.
This guy was like, I need to find out something, so let's stick a tentacle in his ear.
Mm. I don't want to talk about it more. I have other things to say, but yeah, just don't really like it. I have to say, just performances, I think, I can't remember the actor's name, it plays Krennic. I think he's a really good villain. Like, nothing out of the ordinary, like, but just good, like, easy to dislike.
No, he's in Ready Player One as a villain as well, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's kind of the same, but good.
Yeah, good.
But good.
If
like,
you're like, I need this kind of guy, he's your guy.
Yeah, he does it well. Riz Ahmed, I think, is Bodhi. I think he's really good. Yeah, just all the performances pretty good, to be honest. Favourite scenes. So before I come on to my favourite bit. So I just, it's not really a scene, but just the whole bit once they get to... Scarif, and they kind of have a vague plan, and Jyn gives this really good rousing speech about we go and we take the next chance, and then if that works out we take the next and we keep going until we succeed. But it's all these little bits, like they have to get into the base and then K2SO has to cover for them, and then the other guys are all battling, and then the rebellion get there, and then they have to get to the comms, and that's all them working together. And you know, Jyn and Cassian don't know that Bodhi is doing all that stuff with the comms. They just have to trust this trust thing again, that everyone is doing their bit and the parts are all moving. And I just love how you cut in between all the scenes and that bit when they're in the tower with the records and they're shooting and the way it cuts. And I just think it's such an exciting sequence. Mm.
Even though you kind of know what the end result is.
Yeah, you know they're going to do it, but you don't know how. And it's so tense and so many things go wrong and everyone's got to do their little bit. And like, the blind guy, whose name I wrote down, Chirrut, he's got to go do the switch.
When a film can make you kind of feel that, even though you know the outcome, that's when you know it's a good film.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Like, you always say, we're back to the future.
Yeah, I was literally about to say that.
You know they obviously get back to the future because you've seen it, like, a thousand times.
But when the cable's coming out and Doc has to go and get it out the tree, I'm like, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? Like, every time. And I know he will, but I'm, like, on edge every time. But... the best thing, oh my God, right. So, I don't know if it was just the effects of the time. Obviously, the old Star Wars films are amazing, but I don't know, just growing up watching it, I was never that scared of Darth Vader.
Mm.
I knew he was the villain, but the final scene where they're trying to board and get the plans, so they've downloaded the plans of the Death Star and they're trying to get it onto that escape pod, where like Princess Leia is, and Darth Vader gets on the ship and the music, and he's just going mental and throwing people around and stabbing people, and I get shivers. It is terrifying. I mean, it's not that music, is it?
Is it not?
I don't know.
Oh, no, of course not.
No.
What is it? It's the other Darth Vader theme, but like from episode 3.
Oh, okay.
Waiting on the lava and stuff, kind of.
Yeah, but like, because I've just never felt that terror at Darth Vader, but that scene is terrifying. Mm. It's so good.
And that's another one where you know the plans are going to get through, but you were just like watching them on the floor, like, open like, the door, open the door.
And he's like stabbing people through the door and they just get it through and the door's stuck and you're like, oh my God. And you're just, it's so tense. And then you see Princess Leia and you're like, oh my God. And it's just so cool. So that I think that is like just one of my favorite scenes in a film like ever. I think it's brilliant.
So many things though, because like you didn't know Darth Vader was even going to be in the film as well, do you? And kind of like seeing it on the big screen for the first time, seeing Darth Vader suddenly appear, seeing him in that way. Sometimes you can't capture all that.
No.
Like if you just, I don't know, popped it on a DVD at home on like a little TV with people chatting over it, like it isn't. I try to think of we talk about it with Your Name, and it's like moments where they have a massive impact to me when I first see it in the cinema that always sticks with me even when I'm watching it again. Another one of those would be Scott Pilgrim, where they first play the band at the beginning and the sofa like pans out, and I just remember that impact of it being so loud, you know, in the cinema. And you go from someone speaking to that like panning and the sound. Sometimes you can't capture that again. So if someone has their first experience at home and they don't have all that, you know, do they experience the same kind of film that I do? Weird, isn't it? I think this is one of them as well.
Yeah.
Like, especially then, like, Carrie Fisher unfortunately died like that day.
I think we saw it and then we saw it again a few weeks later, and between seeing that, she died.
Oh, okay.
And like, I feel kind of weird because I'm not the biggest Star Wars, not because I dislike Star Wars, but I'm just haven't seen it as much as like other people. It's not like my favorite thing ever, but I think I cried a lot. Like I say, I cry everything because it was just, she was there and she wasn't, and it's just really sad. And she's not, I mean, we're gonna have to see what happens with like episode 9, but it's
just CGI really sad all the way.
Yeah, I think they had some footage as well. We'll have to see. But obviously, it's, oh my God, this shield. It's tragic anyway, not just because
touching it. Leave it.
Obviously, it's her life. It's not the end of the world that she's not in the last episode of Star Wars. Her life is more important.
Next, moving on.
Yeah. I think that was it. I think it was trivia.
Good. It's late.
Yeah. So this is the first Star Wars film where the name Skywalker is not mentioned.
Didn't know that.
Did they mention it in Solo?
Don't know. I have to put that on the list.
Maybe this was correct at the time, and it's not correct anymore. And also mentioned earlier, Michael Giacchino, who wrote the music, he has composed the music for every one of J.J. Abrams' films, but not The Force Awakens, because that's John Williams.
Yeah, makes sense.
And my last one, again, this was correct at the time, but maybe it's not since Solo came out, I don't know, but it's the first Star Wars film without transition wipes.
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay.
From watching the film.
Yeah, I know. Something. Once I read it, I was like, oh yeah. So that was it. So yeah, I guess my conclusion would be it's a really good action sort of adventure film. It's a bit more serious than the other Star Wars films. I would say less of sort of a adventure romp, but it just adds so much more context and depth to the universe and to A New Hope. And you sort of see the suffering of the people that are involved in the rebellion. And I don't know, it might be my favorite of the, you know, since The Force Awakens, we've had quite a few Star Wars films. This might be my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
This or The Force Awakens. I mean, I like all of them, but yeah, it's really good.
Okay.
Have you got any other thoughts?
No, I think I've said all mine.
Yeah, we said quite a lot. Other than
I just, it's probably one of the best Star Wars films, I think.
Yeah. Could be controversial, but less controversial than saying The Last Jedi, maybe.
Okay. ending that section there to avoid any more conflict. Thank you, as always. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Good Vibes Film Club.
Thank you all.
Can you say thank you to anyone?
Thank you to everyone that might be listening.
Yeah, thank you. If you would like to, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/goodvibesfilmclub, and you can access bonus content for $1 a month. You can follow up me on Twitter at Cosmic Onion, and you can send an email to fanmail@goodvibesfilmclub.com. And if you would like to support us and try and make us a bit more well known, you can leave us a review on iTunes and tell your friends. And tell your cat.
Tell the world.
And the world.
Yeah.
What films are we doing next week?
I have already forgotten.
I can tell you the first one. It's one that I don't like.
Yeah, because we thought we both did films that both of us really like this week. So we're going a bit more weird next week. So you finally, after knowing me for 10 years, like, it's not my favourite film, but you're going to watch, it's my favourite musical.
Right.
West Side Story.
West Side Story. I'm going to have to make sure I'm drunk for that one. It'll make it better. It'll make it better. And the other one that we're going to do?
Space Jam.
Space Jam.
I have seen. Not
when you were like,
probably not for 20 years.
Okay. Do you remember it liking it? Okay, we'll find out next time. That's all for now. And we look forward to giving you another episode next week.
Yep. Ciao. Goodbye. Thank you.